individuals. Again, it's more trouble than to mass prepare for the generic group. But the fact is, quality service means that people are very, very different. And we have to be flexible and prepared to deal with different needs, different wants, different desires. But it's part of investing time and money in getting prepared. Actually, that system you had, oh, here he is. Okay. Maybe you can clean off the board at least when I... Okay, you can write down too. We should have a daily checklist. It's a simple thing. Yeah, put it up there. It's number six. A daily checklist of what needs to be done to be prepared for visitors and customers and individuals coming to the temple. One of my a very big man in India, but I knew him and preached to him fairly regularly. His name was G.D. Birla. So he was a multi-millionaire, a billionaire actually, one of the wealthiest families in India. So he had one factory near Mirzapur in Madhya Pradesh, in the central part of India, called Hindalco. It was one of the largest aluminum factories in Asia. So it was very, very well known in the Birla company that Mr. Birla, the first place he would look when he came to the factory was he would go to the workers' bathroom to see how clean it was. Because he knew that if the workers' bathroom was properly cleaned, then probably the rest of the company or the rest of the factory would also be not only clean but well managed. The chairman of a major airline in North America made the comment that when people fly on our airplanes, if they see the flip-down tray in the seat, if that flip-down tray is dirty with coffee stains, then people automatically think that that's the same way we manage our engine maintenance. It's unfair of them to think like that, but that's the way people perceive things. So in our temples, we should have a checklist of preparing for, just like I go to someone's home, when you go to someone's, a householder's house, maybe someone with the little funds, or you know, someone who works in a business or whatever, he has a nice little house, and you go to his house, or you go home even, to your parents' place, you know, you see that the housewife, she's got everything planned for receiving guests. There's extra towels in the bathroom. There's some nice perfume in the bathroom to, you know, whatever. And in the living room, it's nicely tidy and the magazines are nicely placed, etc. That same kind of attitude we should have for our temples, for receiving visitors. We should, when people actually do come, that's a moment of truth. It's an opportunity to make a devotee or lose a devotee, lose a member, we should ask the right questions to find out. Yeah, that's number seven. Ask the right questions to find out from them how we can serve them better, what their needs are. One of the best ways of preaching, number eight, is to listen to people who come to our temple, to give them, to listen for the real meaning also, because people they're not always able to express themselves. A lot of the time sometimes it's difficult to express yourself. Sometimes, especially when you're in an environment, an atmosphere which is new to you. So it may be hard to actually express. So you listen to people carefully. Find out, ask them questions. Where are you from? Is this the first time you've come in contact with us? You know, what's your impression of us? What do your friends think? What's your idea of religion? Prabhupada would often ask, before he would do any preaching, what would he do? He would ask people, what's your idea of God, right? You ever hear that on a tape or in a lecture? What's your impression? What's your idea first? So it's important. we have to try to, number nine, try to match solutions with problems. In other words, our philosophy is very deep. In India, we used to have a banner at our question and answer booth. We would have pandals, 15, 20, 30,000 people. A big tent program with kirtan and lecture and video and everything. So we would have a big banner that said, all problems, all questions answered, all problems solved. And that was actually Prabhupada's idea. He gave us that idea for the banner. All questions answered, all problems solved. So we have to use our philosophy and tune it to the problems that the person, the visitor, conceives of, and reveal that philosophy to him. That'll go a long way to creating a good impression, a first impression. Well, for example, if someone thinks that decadent morality is a major problem in the world, so we can tell him about the four regulative principles. We can tell him about lust, anger, and greed, and how it's interesting. Someone, Kavi Chandra Maharaj, recently made this statement in a discussion amongst GBCs that we were having in San Diego, how everybody in the world wants to be in the mode of passion. They want everybody to be in the mode of passion. There's all these passionate movies and all these hoardings, billboards that sell clothing with naked women, and the movies are all violence and passion. So everybody wants people to be in the mode of passion, but nobody's supposed to get angry. Everybody's supposed to be peaceful and happy. They don't go together. So we can explain that from our philosophy. Or if someone thinks that world starvation, overpopulation, that's a big problem. In that way, if you inquire from them, just like at the Sunday feast, you know, that's a totally mismanaged aspect of the Sunday feast, is the Sunday feast lecture. There's been some discussion on Calm about this, and it's actually quite sanguine, quite appropriate, that we don't know who's there at our Sunday feast, and we have sometimes two or three or even four or five different groups of people. So the person who gives the Sunday feast lecture, he may ramble on for 45 minutes about a subject which 40-50% of the Sunday feast guests have no interest in. One thing is that a Sunday feast lecture, this is just my conjecture, but it's also there's a consensus amongst many people, should only be about 20 minutes long, because people, it's hard for them to absorb, give their attention, first of all, but to absorb more than 20 minutes of heavy philosophy like we have. Our philosophy is not lightweight, it's heavyweight. You know, lightweight philosophy is like, you know, help your fellow man, be nice to people, and, you know, the Christian philosophy is lightweight. That's why people kind of get into it easily. They get out of it easily also, but they get into it easily. But our philosophy, you're not this body. I mean, that's one of the most heaviest things I ever heard in my life. When I heard that, really, I'd never thought of that as a solution to my problems before. And when a devotee told me that for the first time, I was floored. I was stunned by it. So we have to, you know, dose it out in digestible doses, you know. But there's a lot we can do with our preaching, so it's important. And of course, always thank and make people feel good. We should be, as again I said, you know, there's two groups that like flattery, men and women. And so we should, when people come to the temple, and we should thank them for coming, and just make them feel very, very happy. One of the first lessons I learned about membership making was from another one of my gurus, Garga Muni. Prabhupada used to call him Garga Money. And he was very smart that way, Jewish, New York Jewish too. That's an extra qualification. So he He taught me that when someone comes to the temple, show them a good time. Don't pressure them for money, for donations, for this or that. Get their name and address, and then go to their house or their office and put the squeeze on them. And he was expert at putting the squeeze. I mean, but anyway, that's a different point. I have opinions on that. But he said that if you squeeze them or give them a rough time at the temple, they'll never come back. They may or they may not give to you, but they'll remember a bad experience. Every time I go to the temple, you know, they're going to, just like there used to be in America, there used to be coffee houses. It was a big thing in the 70s. Christian coffee houses. And you go in there for a cup of coffee and a guy will sit down beside you and, you know, have you been saved yet? You know, it was like, I just came for a cup of coffee and listened to a guitarist, you know, and he's heavy on you about being saved. So, you know, we have to be careful how we do these things. Okay, next one is what to do when the member is angry or defensive. Now, the facts of life are that, you know, being kind and courteous, and it's like in the Walt Disney video, you know, people come, and everybody from time to time in their lives has a bad day. You'll find that inevitably, you know, some of the members are going to act like the south end of a northbound horse. They're going to do things that, you know, you don't deserve it. They're going to come at you with complaints and problems, etc. And we have to know how to react. So the first thing is, when someone gets angry, what's the first thing you want to do? Well, even before that, just a general attitude. Listen to him, yes. Pacify him, yes. All these things you have to do, but how will you do it? You have to, first of all, keep yourself very cool. You have to keep a cool head. So, you've got to deal with two things when someone's angry. You've got to deal with their emotions. You've got to deal with their feelings. You've got to calm them down. And then you have to deal with the problem. That's the next thing. They did have a problem that made them agitated. So you have to keep a cool head. And, you know, there's the tendency that I felt this way because I'm a, you know, kind of, I hate to use this word, but it's true. So I'm kind of a passionate person, you know. Enthusiastic, there's the word I was looking for. You know, there's the tendency to think in terms of fight fire with fire. But the problem is people who fight fire with fire, they often end up with ashes. So it's not a good strategy. It's better to just keep cool and deal with the person's problems. Again, listen. Somebody said listen. Listen with empathy. When someone comes to the temple, it's a moment of truth. We're learning to manage the moments of truth. In the airport or on the street when you're distributing books and you meet with someone who knocks the book out of your hand. I don't know if you have these people in Europe. We have lots of them in America, but in the airports we really got ourselves in some hot water. But when you meet these kind of people, you've got to, you know, try to find out, especially at the temple, find out what's agitating them and listen to them with empathy because they do have a point of view. So try to see things from their point of view and get the facts. You really have to get the facts because if you can get the facts, a lot of times, you know, you can solve a problem by bringing the real truth to light, the real facts. Another way to disarm people is to take notes. The person who, there might even be one person in the temple who's expert at dealing with visitors who are irate. And it's a good idea because have you ever had an experience? How many have had this experience where someone comes to the temple, he's got a problem, he gets very angry, and he does it in the midst of a crowd of people all around? Who's seen that before? Yeah, all of you have seen it. Wow, I didn't. it's a heavy trip when that happens, and it's very embarrassing. So often it's good to get that person in a nice, quiet place and have someone deal with them, take notes, listen to them, nod your head, agree with them. And it's an art to do that. Apologize. Try to solve their problems. Number three is, okay, you can say number two is listen with empathy and get the facts. Okay. Yeah, that's take notes and nod your head and whatever. Number three is solve the problem. Tell the truth. Be truthful with them and apologize profusely. Nothing wrong with apologizing. Nobody ever lost by apologizing. It amazes me how often wounds fester and get out of, you know, get totally gangrene because two people are pretty close to agreeing with each other, but they just fail to apologize. And you know, when you apologize to someone, it doesn't hurt, and it really kind of, you know, it diffuses things. Either they have to change their attitude towards you, or they also have to apologize. And when two people apologize to each other, the whole thing's over. So, and that's one characteristic of a Vaishnava, that he doesn't hold grudges. Okay, let's see here. Number four is once you've solved their problem, politely, you know, finish with the thing. Don't beleaguer the point. Politely close. C-L-O-S-E, polite close. And number five is the fact that you won't win them all. Sometimes you just, you know, sometimes you'll find people who are angry, defensive, and you can't help them, and that's the end of it. So don't get, you know, if you deal with angry and defensive people all the time, it can give you a kind of mindset. It can really become depressing. So you should, you know, not worry about it, and maybe get a little extra exercise or whatever, dance a little extra in kirtan, because not everybody's like that. Has special requests. This is again a moment of truth. When someone comes to the temple and they don't want, they've got some special thing. They want a special photo of the deities, or they want, you know, to know something from the scriptures, or they want to meet someone, or they want to make a telephone call, and there's no telephones open at the present. There's so many different circumstances where you would have to go out of your way to help them. And those who want to be successful, those who want to develop a good reputation for the temple, it's recommended that you have to learn to customize. You have to learn to deal with special requests. And there's many, many examples in the business world of companies that didn't want to deal with it. Ford Motor Company is a good example. Henry Ford, he had 3/4 of the automobile industry in America. He was the first, and he was the biggest. He had 3/4 of the industry, and he wanted to mass produce cars. He said a customer can have any color of car he wants as long as it's black. And General Motors, they built their niche upon customizing. They ate away into the Ford market and surpassed them by customizing. And now it's turned around completely. Ford did the same thing and now is eating into General Motors market, because General Motors did not change their models. They became stagnant. The Japanese also did the same thing. They started listening and listening and listening and listening to the customer. And then they did everything the customer wanted in their cars, and they stole the show. They stole the market. We have to do that in our temples. We have to be prepared to deal with people in that way. There are 5 reasons why we should customize. The first reason is that it shows that you actually care about people. And this is important. I can't emphasize it enough, that as devotees, we have to, again and again, we're telling each other, and that's good. Repeating something helps us to imbibe it. It helps us to realize it. We have to feel compassion for the following conditioned souls. You cannot, I guarantee it, you cannot be a preacher unless you have real feeling and empathy for those people out there. They're suffering for a lack of Krishna consciousness, and the responsibility is on you to give it to them. So when you customize, it shows that you care for people. You're ready to take the trouble to deal with their individual problems. It also gives you a source of, it's a, for you and for the temple, for the devotees, it's a source of pride. It gives you confidence that you can deal with the world, that we can solve the world's problems, literally. When we customize and do it nicely, take care of people individually as persons, not just as, you know, computer numbers or people in a line or something, but it gives us confidence. It'll also produce repeat donations. When people are satisfied with your service, there's nothing like an army of satisfied customers, an army of satisfied members, an army of satisfied visitors to the temple. That'll do the most for our reputation. It's also a way of overcoming the defensive attitude. Just like in business, when a salesman, just recently in New York, we bought a new Xerox machine. So we called four companies to come in and give us their spiel. And spiel. It means their line, their rap. Is it German also? What does it mean in German? Play, okay. Their game, okay. It's basically the same thing. They've got a game, they've got a rap, they've got a line, they've got, you know, that they want to give you. So it's like they come in and they just go over the same thing. So the customer, you know, the attitude of the customer is, okay, what's your spiel? You know, tell me your line. In other words, he's expecting, people expect to be treated in a kind of impersonal way. You've got a sales line, dogma, they say in our preaching. You know, you always hear the criticism, why are you so dogmatic? So when you customize with people, you can say to them that, you know, I haven't got a line to give you. Why don't you tell me about yourself so that I can see if I can actually do something for you, if I can help you out. So that disarms them, that gets them off the defensive, and it makes them, you know, receptive. And number five, being prepared to deal with individuals, to deal with them and solve their problems. What it does is it eliminates the competition. Because when you know what people need and you're prepared to go the extra mile to help them, that it put handcuffs on them. It's like the golden handcuffs, because you know more about them and needs, and you meet them better, meet those needs better than the competition. And we do have competition. It's a funny word to use, but, you know, there's other Hindu temples, there's Christians, there's Buddhists, there's Muslims, there's so many, there's the Moonies, there's the this, the that, there's so many other organizations who are trying to build congregations and gather followers. So when we are prepared to take care of people better than anyone else, you have no competition. So number 13 is when they can't make up their mind. So you have to reward such people who are indecisive with recommendations. Again, someone who can't make up his mind, he's just fearful of donating or buying a book or whatever it is. Objections are not, you know, the objections, some people say that objections are the beginning of the sale. When someone says no, it's interesting. Here's an interesting statistic for you. It's a very, very interesting statistic. This is interesting. Almost two-thirds of salesmen, when selling something, almost two-thirds, will go through a whole sales pitch and they'll neglect, believe it or not, they'll neglect ask for the business. They'll go through, they'll deal with objections, they'll tell about the good aspects of the product, they'll do so many things, but at the end of the discussion they won't very enthusiastically ask the person, so would you like to buy it, can I sign you up here, can I make a receipt out for $10,000 donated to, you know, whatever it is. Ask. If you don't ask, you don't get. And if you, you know, it really depends upon your asking. So here's the statistic that 44% of salesmen, they'll give up after one objection, one no. Okay? 44% give up after one no. The customer says, no, I don't want to be a member. I don't want to buy your product. I'm not interested. I don't have the time. I don't have the money. There's lots of different kinds of objections. So 22% will give up after two no's. 14% of salespeople will give up after three no's. And 12% will give up after four no's. 66% of people who do business say no in one way or another four times. Interestingly enough. So what that means is, like, you're selling a... when you go, for example, to buy something, just like the we bought the Xerox machine. So we ended up buying from Linear, or actually it's a 3M company, but Linear sells it. So we must have said no to the others and to Linear also. We weren't originally going to buy with Linear. We were about to sign with, Japanese company. Anyway, point is, we must have said no at least five or six times. But because the Linear salesman was so positive and kept coming back again and again, we just ended up. In fact, what they did was they bought a they brought a machine and they put it in the temple and said, "Here's a loaner, just try it out," you know. And I need. The fact was, I needed one, and that did such a number on my mind that, you know, we ended up buying from them. But it's interesting that this means that 8% of the salesmen. 8% of the salesmen get 60% of the business just because they keep on asking after four no's, after the customer says no four times. So, anyway, literally my time has run out. I'm sorry, we got started late. And as I said, this is the first time I've done this presentation, so the timing is hard to get. I recommend that you get some of this material that I bought, read it. It's very, very interesting. It'll give you a lot of ideas what we need to do to expand our congregation in a very intelligent, systematic, and organized way. I know we can do it. We're not robots or, you know, zombies or anything. We're rational, intelligent people, and we can get ourselves organized. Yes, question?
Nice and enthusiastic. Then that is, I suppose, mainly because they're very enthusiastic about making money or because of material motivations.
So, well, we're only 25 years old, 26 years old also. The Catholic Church is pretty organized. There are religious organized. 27 years is not very much. We're all young. But anyway, I'm sorry. Finish your question.
So if somebody is very motivated, if he has a certain goal and he's very motivated to attain that goal, then he becomes very enthusiastic and then automatically he will become very paka in his organization to get it.
Yeah.
So isn't it also that If we are spiritually not motivated enough to attain that goal, that then the enthusiasm will lack.
That's also there. We have to be individually self-starters, but also part of the training is rewarding. What gets rewarded gets done. And we have to learn in our temples a system of encouraging and rewarding devotees for taking care of visitors to the temple, for quality preaching. Up to now, we've been very, very concerned with quantity. Everything quantity, quantity, quantity. But if we want to be long-term successful, if we want to grow exponentially, we have to learn a little bit about quality. An American went to Japan. He couldn't teach it to the Americans. They were too puffed up. They wouldn't listen to him. Edward Deming. Maybe some of you have heard of him. And he taught the Japanese a philosophy of zero defect manufacturing. Or quality, doing quality business. And the Japanese learned it, and they took over the world by storm. So we also have to learn quality dealings in our preaching. And there is a way to reward devotees. How to keep the spotlight under the customer, the quality member service action plan. Anyway, there's a lot more training that we need. And obviously, in this group here, we're not going to... This is just a motivational seminar, you can say. You're learning things, but there's much, much more. And I'm requesting all of you, please, let's stay in touch. Does anybody know a way that we can stay in touch together constantly? By calm. So please calm on calm, and let's stay in touch. And, you know, Naveen Krishna Prabhu is there in Alachua. He can give you so much more material. We have an ISKCON Foundation conference. I'm also there in New York, although I'm starting to do more traveling now. But please keep in touch with us, and please develop your own ideas. I really am not at all thinking that I'm your teacher. If I can teach you anything, I want to teach you to be learners. Wake up, look around yourself, see the successful people in society. Try to understand what it is that they're doing right. We know everything they're doing wrong. But the fact is, some of them are doing some things right. So let's learn what they're doing right and use it in Krishna's service. Start acting and working smarter. Any more questions? Yes.
Maharaj, I heard that to get that one rewards a kshatriya, I believe. So,
everybody gets sudras need reward too.
So probably isn't something. Our reward pure devotional service? Or?
Yes, our reward is pure devotional service, but until the point that we attain pure devotional service, we need a little impure service encouragement along the way. Just like you talked about kshatriyas, brahmins, vaishyas, sudras. So generally we think, you know, we are, you know, we're Vaishnavas, Haribol. So, you know, all that stuff is for the non-devotees. But we are Vaishnavas. But the fact is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said it very directly, and Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, and other acharyas have said it also more or less directly, that until you're completely free from the modes of material nature, the varnas and ashramas have something for us also to keep us to be peaceful and happy in our lives so that we can execute devotional service throughout our whole life. There are certain things that we need practically to fulfill, you know, our desires. We came here with material desires. So to gradually fulfill our material desires and gradually awaken to pure devotional service, it's nice if someone comes up to you and says, "Jai Maharaj, nice service. That was a nice program you had in Sarajevo, you know, did a good job." I mean, when someone thanks you like that, you know, okay, you know, flattery is my worst, who flatters me, my worst enemy, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But in the bottom of your heart, actually, you feel a little encouraged when someone acknowledges what you did. And when some, why do we have the book marathon and we give prizes in the marathon? You know, and the spiritual master gives you a photo of Krishna. Okay, you're getting a photo of Krishna's pure devotional service, but you're also getting recognized by the Vaishnava, and you feel good about that. And, you know, you want to do it again next year. And so, it's the same with the people who live in our temples or visit our temples or whatever. Any other questions? Yes.
It's more a philosophical question. You mentioned that we have something to learn from the Catholic Church. And I was thinking of the story of the Catholic Church when Christianity was just a, more or less a small group, a sect. And then when they got recognized 300 years after Christ, Constantine, the emperor, recognized the Church. And they tried to adjust to the needs of the society at the time. They had to kind of recognize meat eating and drinking and compromise their philosophy. So my question is, how great is the risk that by accept or adjusting to the needs of the customer, we are watering down our philosophy and culture?
Well, I just recently, about a month or two ago, I put on Calm a marketing program that was carried out by a Southern Baptist minister. And he did a direct mail. He did a survey first. He wanted to start a church in an area where there were other churches. And it was a brand new church, and he didn't know what to do. He had an idea. He wanted to go after people who were unchurched. The young people, the baby boomers. After the Second World War, there was a boom in babies in America. All the soldiers came back, and I was born. So the baby boomer generation, he wanted that because a lot of them are skeptics and cynics and new age, wishy-washy, whatever you want to call them. And so he wanted to go after them and have a congregation of those people because they're also, many of them are becoming very wealthy and taking over the country. So he did a survey to find out why they weren't coming to the church, what they wanted, this, that, the other thing. And then he sent a direct mail piece, and he got a fabulous response. The average church in North America has about 150 people as a congregation. There's the Catholics and the, what do you call them? The Protestants. Wow. Protestants. So the average Protestant church has about 150 people coming. So within 5 weeks, he had 350 people coming to his church because he did a lot of things right. Southern Baptists, if you know anything about Southern Baptists, I mean, they're down and dirty about their philosophy. They don't compromise, you know. They're the heavy Bible punchers, Bible pushers. But he was, this is a book, Marketing for Churches and Ministries. And right in the beginning of the book, the man says that, you know, you don't need to compromise your principles and your philosophies to use marketing techniques. So I believe we can do it. It's just like, for example, when we had our first meeting in San Diego with the North American GBC, there was one gadfly who was he always raises objections about it. You want to do anything? He's got an objection for it, right? There's always one in the crowd. So he was really down on our program. We were trying to, this was in 1991, in May. So we were trying to introduce this paradigm shift, and he was down on it. You know, he saw the foundation as an octopus with big arms and tentacles that was reaching out to try and control everything. And he challenged a lot of the ideas that we were giving. So then Naveen was watching the whole thing very smugly, smiling like he is right now. And so I had searched on my computer Prabhupada's books and letters, everything that Prabhupada said about membership. And Naveen took out these handy little plastic sheets. He had about 20 of them. One after the other, there was quote after quote after quote from Prabhupada's books confirming everything that we were saying. And the guy was just like, all right, I give up. You know, he immediately surrendered. So we don't have to compromise. So my time is up, and I want to encourage all of you, please, come this evening for Priyavrata's seminar. It's 7:30 or 7:45 or maybe 8 or 7:30. Anyway, where will it be? Okay, it'll be here. It's important for you to know how to manage data, to manage information. And most of us are not experts at it, but it's time we started to learn a little something about it. Manage information, analyze it, use computer software, whatever. It's not that difficult or, you know, impossible. So please do come. And if you have any questions or anything, I'll be available tomorrow. For most of the day, I guess I can meet with groups of people or individuals to discuss programs. Naveen Krishna Prabhu also. So please do take advantage of us while we're here. Otherwise, take the material that we have or keep in touch with us on Com. Thank you.